Hey, this is Elizabeth.
This is Keisha.
Hi, this is Leslie Sullivan, and welcome to the Mustard Seed Podcast.
Okay, well, welcome back to the table. Today we are going to take another little detour from Matthew, and you know, 'tis the season, so we're going to take a look at the three wise men, which is something I think that we all know about, we all sing about, we all see in all the nativity scenes, but we don't really talk about who they were or what they were and why they were there. So we thought we'd kind of bring on the holiday season talking about them.
It's one of my favorite songs for Christmas, by the way.
It's a good one.
It's in our choir cantata coming up, so I love it too.
So like we said, we kind of, you know, we see them in most nativity scenes, not all, depending on how, where you fall, because you know they weren't there in the, you know, in the whole manger scene. They might have been part of his, you know, birth story, but they weren't there until he was around two, likely. He was a toddler by the time the wise men located Mary and Joseph and Jesus. But we do. We sing their songs, and we know that they brought three gifts. You know, so a lot of it was just kind of, so who were they? We see them in, you know, Matthew 2, which we covered earlier this year. You know, so they came from the east, which means anywhere from Persia, which would be modern day Iran, could be Ethiopia, could be Arabia, meaning they traveled a good 900 miles or more following the star to find Jesus.
It's just, if you think about the way we, well, I'll admit it, the way I complain about travel sometimes, imagine per se traveling for this 2 years, following this star in the sky. Now, obviously they weren't traveling every day, blah, 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 but
right,
they just continually seeking this and traveling that far.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a huge part of the story that I don't think we always think about, is the actual travel to where Jesus was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
that's one of those things I took out of like just thinking about it today too.
Yeah. But no, they did, you know, they traveled, and even as an adult, even though I know that they didn't show up until he was older and they weren't at the manger scene, you still, because of everything that we see during this time of year, you just automatically think, oh yeah, they were there, and they went, it was just a neighboring town. It wasn't a big deal.
It's like coming from like East Texas or coming from East Tennessee. Like you just think it's that close, and it's so not.
It's not. Yeah. And they were on camels. Yeah, you know, they weren't even in cars. They were on camels, which are not even, you know, the best, fastest mode of transportation of that time around of the year. And I mean, as anybody who watches Aladdin, they spit.
I was hoping one of us would do that reference tonight. Anyway,
I got you. You have to love Robin Williams
all the time. All the time.
I know one of the theories is that they came from Persia, mm-hmm. and that they had the prophecies and the timing from Daniel. They had some of the books of the Bible, so they knew they were looking for the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Daniel, I think it even talks that he was over the Magi.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. And I love that theory that he basically, because it's not theory so much, but, you know, it talks about it. It's Daniel 9, you know, and it includes the prophecy, which gives you the timeline for Jesus's birth, you know, so they were watching and waiting for that just because based off of Daniel, I would assume, because if he was pretty much the start of that, you know, and the head of that, you know, he was going to be explicit in his writing and in his teachings. He was very clear, you know, mm-hmm. that's why even, you know, Jesus was like, you were told when I was going to be here. Like mm-hmm. you could have looked, you know, you don't think yeah. Daniel didn't make sure that was explicitly laid out.
And it was told to Daniel while he was still in Persia. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And then they also would have been aware of the prophecy of Balaam, who was from a town that was on the Euphrates River. I'm not going to say the name of the town because I don't need to embarrass myself like that tonight. But it was also near Persia. So, but it was in Numbers 24 where his prophecy specifically mentions the star coming out of Jacob. Mm-hmm. So they had a lot of material to know what to look for.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Magi, that's kind of where our word magician comes from. You know, that's the root, but they weren't anything like what we see now.
Yeah.
You know, or what we understand magicians to be. You know, they were, you know, of noble birth. They were educated. They were wealthy, influential. They were philosophers. They were the ones that all the rulers went to for counsel. You know, these were highly respected men, you know, of likely royal descent. And like we mentioned earlier, we don't know how many were actually there. We don't know how many traveled. We just know the number of gifts that they brought.
Yeah. And again, going kind of back to like mm-hmm. Persia and all those things, just the way that term magi is associated with intelligence and priest, almost priest-like concept too, where they're the more learned, because they know about dreams, and it goes back to even I just lost his name, Joseph, interpreting dreams. Sorry, I was like, which one are we talking about? But it goes back to like, this is where some of that also came from, at least yeah. according to this like archaeology report thing that I found. It talks about how they all kind of stemmed from learning the scrolls and learning this and learning that, and then interpreting dreams to be what they were supposed to mean, you know, like the seven grains of grain, you know, all that kind of yeah, stuff. So yeah. I just thought that was really interesting to look at in relation to where they're coming from in Persia, and then the journey across and all the things they would have to encounter and all that. And mm-hmm. I mean, reading this article on BibleArchaeologyReport.com, there's so many things I still don't understand after reading it that I need to like dig in, but don't have that much time to do yet. But just interesting things about the dates and times and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, and I love that. It's one of the things. It's one of the fun and hard things about research. You start getting into it, and you're like, ooh. You know, and there's like all these little rabbit trails that you can go down.
Yeah.
And I want to, you know, you want to go down all of these different rabbit trails for our purposes here. We don't, you know, and a lot of us don't, all three of us don't have the time to sit and really go through every single rabbit trail to be able to bring here. Cause it's, you know, most of the time we're like, okay, what day? Here's a list of days this month that I can get together. Who can also do this in any of these days? And it's a matter of just trying to figure everything out between basketball, baseball, soccer, church, you know,
all the things.
All of the things that we all have going on in our lives, youth, women, you know, everything. But, you know, but I mean, and this is always important. So it's always hard to pick and choose which rabbit trail you go on. That way we can kind of bring that to light. But I also think it's good to know that there are other things. So that way it gets people's interest piqued too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with the tradition, you know, that they state that there was three, you know, and there's that, and again, tradition states but the Bible doesn't say anywhere, so we can't really confirm the accuracy, but the Bible states that they're not, excuse me, tradition states, Bible does not state. Take that, rewind it, you know, yeah. reverse it. That their names were Caspar Melchior. I don't know. I'm assuming that sounds right. There's the I in there makes me want to say it like choir. And Balthazar, which is also was Daniel's Persian name, which I thought was kind of interesting. But I know that, you know, three is a good number. It sounds good in songs and it sounds good. I always think about it though, like as we're forming, as people are forming like the nativity scene in their brains and kind of forming, you know, just the depiction of everything, three probably just stuck out because they're like, hey, there's three gifts. It's all we need. And why would people show up to the birth of the savior of the world with nothing?
Yeah. So like, oh, I just thought I'd show up.
I my name's on that box too, just so you know.
I got you a gift card.
Hey, did you need some diapers? Like, here, I got some cloth for that.
Yeah, I was trying to find if there was like any, like, and I'm sure there is somewhere that even I don't know how to research of why and why there was only three gifts, but they were also the three most kind of regal and royal honored gifts to give.
Yeah.
At that time. So that's why those three stand out compared to maybe other things that were brought by her say their entourage or whatever. So, but I try to look and see if there was ever anywhere in research anything else about more than three gifts or things like that. And so anyway.
And there could have been, but those three are very symbolic when it comes to just who Jesus was and what he did. Like his, they were a part of his life because you have gold, which is still a valuable, you know, commodity, but it's a symbol of divinity. You know, it's mentioned, we haven't mentioned throughout the entire Bible about what's like, there's idols being made of gold. The Ark of the Covenant was, you know, was overlaid with gold. I mean, so the gold was the kind of just showed his divinity. And then frankincense, which I learned because I know it as an oil, right? I know it as an essential oil. Same thing with myrrh. I know those as essential oils. Yeah. I don't know them as like their natural source, but you know, with it, frankincense is a resin or a gum, which is obtained by a tree. And I did not know that. But again, it's fragrant when it's burned and and because of that, it's used a lot in worship and burnt offerings to God. And, you know, it's a symbol of holiness and righteousness. So you have, you know, his divinity, his holiness, his righteousness. And then you have the myrrh, which is why some people think that the wise men came from Arabia, is because that's where myrrh comes from. Like that's where the tree is that myrrh comes from. And, you know, it was a spice that was used in embalming. And also mingled with the wine to kind of help the pain process. Like that would have been what Jesus was offered on the cross. So then you have, you know, they said, I kind of saw that it was like the myrrh kind of symbolized it, the bitterness and the suffering and the affliction that he went through. And so you have all these three things that tied throughout his entire life story that were given to him by the wise men. So it's almost like because they knew what was going on, that's what was brought.
As we joke, as I joke with my mom and I joke with in our office, it's like there was a plan for all of this to connect. Weird. And like, yeah, like for us to do this kind of stuff and go, oh, so there was a plan. It did come true. This is what happened. Okay. You know, and I think we just sometimes just think some things are either coincidence or we don't connect all the dots. Obviously we don't connect all the dots because some of this stuff I didn't learn until I was much older. Right. Even though as a kid, I knew these stories and all that kind of stuff. And so I just love the, as we joke, oh, so you're saying there was a plan. Yeah. And God had an idea what he was doing. Okay, cool. So
just shows even the knowledge that these men had too, that they understood God's plan a little bit. They understood the legacy that Jesus had set before him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Something that kind of came up when Steve and I were discussing the wise men, because again, it's not anything that either of us have really looked into, because we the basics, but I kind of wanted to do it since we talked about Daniel 2 years ago. Cause I was like, if he's the head of that, then these wise men had to know a little bit more too. But as we were talking about it, you know, it's like, we still have to understand that the wise men were not of Hebrew descent. They weren't Jewish. They weren't a part of that religious community. You know, they were from, for all intents and purposes, they were from pagan cultures, but they understood the divinity and the purpose of what was about to go down, you know? So you have then still God using Gentiles and people outside of the Hebrew community to tell of his son and like of their, like the savior, you know? So it's always mind blowing to see how much God uses others. You know, he uses the shepherds who were like the least of us, right? Like the lowest of the low of that community. But yet he still followed the same order as Jesus did. He came first to the Jews, because the shepherds were all Hebrew shepherds out there. So he came first to them, and then he came, you know, then the Gentiles came to tell about his birth. And so it was in that same order where Jesus was like, you know, he told the woman, you know, that he wasn't here for her. You know, he was only here for the Israelites, the Jewish community. And she was like, yes, but you know, even it's more like, isn't that the one where she talks about the scraps, you know, even the dogs would get the scraps from the table.
Yeah.
And that's when he healed her child, I believe, because of her faith. And if I'm wrong, I apologize.
Yep.
So it wasn't the bleeding woman that this occurred with. It was the other one.
No. And it wasn't the son that who had died either. I think she had just come to him asking for healing for her son, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and then he did that because then he saw the faith of a Gentile. I mean, and you saw that over and over throughout his mission. You see all the Roman soldiers, you know, the ones that came to him and with faith, you know, and people who had fallen away, the Samaritans, the everything, you know, but yet he still he still came first for God's people and then decided, you know, by God's divinity, God's plan was to just include us all.
Yeah. So I think one of the, we're doing a theme for our church this Christmas called Light of the World. And so we've been talking about stars and, seeking the light, right? Like that's what we've been talking about a bunch. And I just think it's so interesting of the guiding light, the star in the sky, being that thing we follow. And so, you know, obviously even explorers use stars to find you know, points in the sky to know where they were going on their journeys and all those kinds of things. And I want to think like this was the first time they did that kind of stuff. I probably wasn't, but you know, in my head, that's what I think. And I just want to imagine the first time you saw that big star in the sky, like when you were that shepherd, the wise men, you know, any of the people of that time, and this star just suddenly became bigger and brighter when Jesus was born.
Yeah.
And I know some scholars are trying to like, you know, well, it was probably this star, or they probably saw this, or maybe it was a planet, a sun, you know,
going like out. A sunburst or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm like, okay, he had a pillar of light that the Israelites followed in the desert. You know, I just feel like there's just something that came from God. I don't think there was no need to try to science it. That couldn't have happened, you know, because I mean, that all comes from God. I mean, we see in science every day, and you know, you look at the cosmos and they just scream at the creation of God, you know, everything, the way it moves and how it explodes, you know. So he could definitely use that, but he could also just be like, hey, there's a star.
True. Very true. I just think it's neat to think about, obviously, again, all pre-spoken about, shared about, known about, light of the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And using the wise men to really point out how significant that light was because they came from so far.
Yeah.
I think that's also kind of neat to think about and honestly ponder at, like, we drive around and look at Christmas lights, right? And today in the office, we're having a office door decorating contest for Christmas because we got to do some fun things, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
I decided my theme was National Lampoon's Vacation because I wanted to just like bathe my door in lights, but then I didn't think about how I could close my door. So that's a whole other issue. But but I was just thinking about like that. There's that moment in the movie where he plugs in the house and it's, whoa,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's, again, it's what I want to interpret, like the wise men and the people in the sky going, whoa.
Yeah.
Kind of moment with that star showing that the prophecy had been fulfilled. Right.
Well, shoot. There were angels singing too for the shepherds.
I'm just saying.
So they had it both. They had a full Chevy Chase moment.
Go tell it on the mountain was so we're going into shepherds a little bit here, but the wise men are just important. But I just think it is that, I think it's that awe and wonder of how bright light can like change your perspective. Like when you're driving your car too, right? And person's headlights in front of you are coming at you are either the brights or just obnoxious for that moment in your view. Cause you're like, why do you have your brights on? And they're not, but because you're just blinded by this big bright white light. And that's what I want to sometimes dream that's what happened when the wise men finally saw that star in the sky. You know, what I mean, just, it was, you couldn't miss it.
Yeah.
Could Harold be the character in the National Lampoon, the neighbors who topple down the steps because it's so bright?
I love it. Yes.
Why is the floor all wet, Todd?
Yeah. I love it.
We literally just watched that last night. So, did you? Yeah. I told him, we had nothing in the evening. And I was like, you know what? Let's just eat dinner. Let's watch a Christmas movie. So Stephen picked and it was that one. I'm like, perfect.
Awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
We watched like a cheesy Hallmark movie last night because Brian picked. Oh, I know.
That's on recording. It's on recording. We are not deleting that out.
Going public. Brian picked the Hallmark movie. But he also picked one of those like really cool like 1990s ones, like that's older and had like Steve Guttenberg in it.
Oh.
And, so it was like, it wasn't like a current cheesy Hallmark. It was an old school Hallmark.
Like cult classic.
Like back when they were only once or twice a year and not once or twice a week that they shot one.
Yes.
So.
What was it called? I mean, listening ears want to know.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'll Google that really quick.
Yeah, Google that. I'm like, no. I still have to watch, White Christmas. That's something I had to plan that. But that's a plan with my sister. That's what we always do.
Already watched it once this year. I'll watch it again soon.
I love it. You have to.
I've never seen it.
I know. I actually didn't even think about the fact that I just brought that up because Keisha, Leslie and I are on the same page with Danny Kaye. So he's a national treasure. That man was highly underrated of his time.
All right. You want to know the name of the Steve Guttenberg movie?
Yes.
Single Santa Seeks Mrs. Claus.
Oh, that's a perfect Hallmark.
It's how cheesy it is, but it was actually really wonderful and sweet.
Perfect.
There you go. You're welcome. Movie recommendations by the podcast, by the Mustard Seed. For your holiday cheer. And that doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with the Wiseman, but you know, hey.
Tis the season. We are spreading the joy.
We're also having fun. So.
I do like the idea, like you stated, to kind of roll it back a little bit to, you know, as far as them having that light and being so focused on that, you know, you're following because you know what's at the end, like, you know what's there, mm-hmm. like, you know what the end result is. Yeah. And that's like a great kind of thought for how we should be. You know, we need to be following that light with that kind of determination, whether because we don't have a, you know, we don't have a star, but we understand what the end is going to be. Yeah. So our journey is different. It's not 900 miles on camel, but, you know, it's our life, you know, we know what the end is going to be. And it's just making that trek because, you know, it's always worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just did another quick thing about the star.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two, the nature of the star. This just comes up on a quick search, right? Astronomical theories. Some suggest a planetary conjunction that Jupiter and Venus somehow became a supernova. I'm going to just say that I think that's funny. Anyway, and that others believe it was an angel or some other kind of unique divine sign that we don't now see. Now that one I've heard.
I've heard that too.
A few times that it was a star that was already in existence, but that almost like Captain Marvel came and made it brighter, right? Like one of the angels came and made it brighter for that moment. That one I actually get. The other one I had never read before, a planetary conjunction. I was like, oh, this is not Star Trek. No offense. Star Trek's a wonderful movie, but no. Yeah.
I'm not saying it can't happen and God can't put them right back to where they were in perfect condition, but I feel like it's the supernova to me. And again, this is me just watching sci-fi, like Doctor Who, Star Trek, stuff like that. I just think of things combusting when they become a supernova. I mean, again, I know God is God, and so he can do whatever he wants to do, however he wants to do it. But I just feel like if it was two planets doing that and it became a supernova, they wouldn't be in existence anymore.
That's kind of what, that's kind of why I don't understand that.
That's my base knowledge. This is nowhere. I did not do well in the math and sciences. Okay.
Not my gift either. You're good. That's why I find that, like, just doing a quick like search of it, you know, in a couple of websites that I use. And they even say this has no basis. The supernatural interpretation of kind of like an angel or something like that to make it brighter makes a lot more sense in some instances.
Mm-hmm.
I also just think God wanted people to see it, so he put it before their eyes and he opened their eyes to see it.
He could have done anything. He could have made any of those stars burn as bright and as large as he wanted to.
Yep. Very much. So
I have heard the angel though. I don't remember where, but I remember I can see it clearly in my brain when that was being told to me. I can remember, and I feel like maybe it's even was depicted when somebody was telling it, you know, of an angel as the star, like just shining so bright you didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know it wasn't it wasn't a star.
Yeah. I also find it interesting just at the end of the story that the Magi who were there to help interpret dreams were warned in a dream not to go back the way they did. And I just love that kind of ending of their little section of the story. Two is to interpret your own dream and don't go that way.
Yeah.
So it sure would be great questions to ask them when we get up there and meet them.
I hope we have a good sit down and question and answer time. Or if it's like, I'm kind of leaning towards we'll understand a whole heck of a lot more because that veil won't be there. So everything that we're learning now still has a veil. Depending on your, you know, your level. Like, I don't know how else to word that, you know, but there's still like, there's things that we have read, but we still don't understand. And it's just because it's not our time to always understand it. We're not in the right mindset, the right place.
You don't need the knowledge too, sometimes is what, is what I've said to a few friends who, you know, are struggling with this or that, and they want to know why am I not, why don't I understand this? Or why can't I get this? Why can't I grasp this in this journey of faith? Like, I had a friend's mom pass away, and she's like, I know she's going to pass at some point. Right. But I don't understand why and why now. And I said, Oh,
yeah,
there's a reality that we don't want to know that too.
Yeah.
Until we're in heaven and fully refreshed and new creations in Christ. Right.
Yeah.
And, cause I agree. Like, I want to know everything.
Me too.
In my head. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm also glad most days that I don't know anything. That the knowledge that I have is just exactly what I need, even though some days it does frustrate me for sure. I'd rather kind of live in that frustrated moment of not understanding something, have my little pity party, and then move back to, but I also understand exactly what I'm supposed to be doing right now, Lord. So I'm going to just, I got my moment out. I'm good now. I'll go back to not complaining now for a moment.
So. Just for today.
Just today.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up on the wise men. I know, again, like we said, there's so many different rabbit holes we could have gone down and we can go down still. But it's just an interesting topic for those of us, those of you, everybody that likes a little bit of history with their knowledge, you know, just to kind of better understand, because the more we understand, the more you look into these things, you see how much everything just is tied and how it was part of that divine plan.
Yeah.
And how there's different meanings and on so many different levels of everything. And it's mind blowing. Just even doing this, I learned so much just in the couple nights, you know, that I sat and I researched and I was writing stuff down and, laughing at the way some people were writing things. I'm like, why are you saying it like that? I love it that there's just so much, and you got to also take the grain, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of conjecture around of these kind of things. When we can't find all the facts, people are going to make liberties. They're going to make up kind of what they think, and that's totally fine. You just have to make sure you're not mixing that with fact too.
Well, we like to complete the story, but we don't have the knowledge or the ability to all the time when we don't need to, like we talked about a second ago. It's just, sometimes it's just faith.
Absolutely. And with that, we will see everybody next time. We want to thank you all for listening to the Mustard Seed Podcast and for joining us on this journey that God laid on our hearts. I know it's hard to feel connected when we are on this side of the microphone, so we wanted to make sure that you knew that you could connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at the Mustard Seed Podcast. Our Facebook group is a community. We share funny memes, Bible verses, and just life. You can reach out however you feel comfortable. We want to build the community that we advocate for on this podcast, the Come As You Are. Our table will never be too crowded and cannot get too big. You belong here, and we want to connect with you.